Sea Grant and Lake Michigan, Waters in Transition, a production of the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. Episode 5, Beaches, Gulls, and Bacteria. Get out, dog. Okay, well, we're on our way south to Milwaukee, but me and the dog decided to take a little stop at Harrington Beach State Park, right on the shores of Lake Michigan. This park actually used to be a quarry. And they quarried rock to help build Wisconsin in the early 20th century. This whole area used to be a company town. That's all gone now except the foundations. It's all quiet except for the trees, the birds, and Lake Michigan in the distance. Harrington Park has a doggy beach, so that's where we're headed. Of course, in these state parks, dog's always on a leash, no more than 8 feet. We're heading to the beach. Lots of little alewives on the beach. Of course, the dog loves to snack on those. She's in carrion heaven. Lake Michigan. If only you could be with us. Well, you're here with us in spirit and in audio. All right, it's a bit windy. You can see the gulls riding the currents of air above the waves. As I walked the dog along the beach, I thought of a sign I'd noticed on the way in. It read, "Water Quality Notice. All natural bodies of water contain microscopic organisms. This area is monitored for E. coli bacteria, an indicator of the possible presence of human health risks. If bacteria levels are above state health standards, an advisory or closure sign will be posted at this location. Do not ingest lake water and, as always, swim at your own risk." Watching the gulls, I was reminded of a recent conversation I had had with Sandra McClellan, a researcher whose work on water quality at beaches is funded in part by the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant. Dr. McClellan is an associate professor at the School of Freshwater Sciences at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. Dr. McClellan and I had been talking about the high number of beach closures that had occurred about a decade ago and how the researchers had responded to that.
We've had several Sea Grant projects over the last 10 years, and it's really been interesting for us as scientists to see the progression of what we've learned over the years. When we started this work way back in, well, probably around 2000 or 2001, the big question was, why are the beaches closed? And there was a lot of finger pointing. It's the gulls, it's the dogs, it's the cows upstream, it's the sewage treatment plant. But from a research perspective, we thought, well, the best thing to do is go out and sample and actually collect some data. So we spent a lot of time at the beach sampling. We got in a boat from here at the Water Institute and went out through the channel into the harbor and took samples all the way across the harbor, all the way to this one beach that was closed almost 50% of the time, South Shore Beach. Being good scientists, we had a hypothesis. We should be able to see a gradient of the pollution that we're tracking from where we started to the beach. And it was interesting because the bacteria we were looking for was an E. coli bacteria. It's really harmless. It's in the gut of all animals, people, pretty much all warm-blooded animals. It indicates that there's fecal pollution present, and this is why they close the beach. So we're looking for this E. coli in our water samples, and we took about 50 water samples from the Water Institute all the way to the beach, and then somebody drove from the Water Institute to this very same beach, and they collected their sample. All of our samples were negative, but the samples taken at the shoreline by the person just wading in and scooping up the water was just filled with E. coli. So now it started to become clearer that what we were seeing at the beach wasn't this big, huge lake-wide problem. It was really localized contamination. So that led us to more projects where we, instead of taking the small boat out, we took a canoe out, and we were trying to figure out how far does this pollution go to. And we found that it's really within the first 10 meters from the shoreline where there's very high levels of E. coli. Well, that's exactly where you do beach monitoring. That's where the kids swim. That's where people have the most contact with the water. But what we were observing was localized contamination at the beach. And as we started to look at different sources, two really main sources came up. One, gulls. They roost all over the beach. They have a lot of fecal material, waste droppings that we have all seen on the beach and unfortunately have stepped in once in a while. And we found out that those are just packed full of E. coli bacteria, the exact bacteria that we're monitoring for. The other source that we didn't suspect right away, but once we started looking for it, it was really obvious, was stormwater outfalls. Those are those big pipes. You'll see them on the rivers, but at beaches, you'll sometimes have stormwater outfalls that drain parking lots and streets, and sometimes they're large and they drain whole neighborhoods. Well, that water has to go somewhere, and it goes directly into Lake Michigan. And the easiest access point for these outfalls is public land, i.e. beaches. So as we started studying some of the beaches around Milwaukee, like Bradford Beach, South Shore Beach, and Atwater Beach a little further to the north, we found that these stormwater outfalls are another big source of E. coli bacteria. So within, I would say, the first like 3 or 4 years in our sea grant studies, we saw a big division in how we tackled our research. We found that there is very localized contamination that we're worried about, and we've spent a lot of time kind of characterizing that and figuring out what's going on. And that's really coastal management issues. But this other side that we're also worried about is a little harder to get a handle on. And that's the more widespread contamination that comes out of the river and dilutes in the harbor and comes towards the beach. We actually have a hard time figuring out how polluted it is because it's very dilute. However, we all know dilution is not the solution to pollution. So we've developed some really good tools to figure out if there's any kind of sewage overflow or really serious agricultural runoff coming down the watershed. We've developed some tools where we're not measuring E. coli bacteria because that water is pretty much negative. The bacteria has died out, it's diluted out, but we can detect those types of pollution signals using DNA testing. So we use some pretty sophisticated tests to try and figure out what's the local impact from things like birds and stormwater outfalls, and then what's the regional impact from the more widespread contamination that comes down the rivers and spreads through the near shore. Over time, I think we've gotten a pretty good idea that both of these sources impact the beach, and we need different tools to figure out exactly how severe it is and whether or not there's a health risk.
You're testing Lake Michigan's DNA?
You know, not exactly Lake Michigan's DNA, but we're testing the DNA of the bacteria that's mixed in Lake Michigan. So Lake Michigan has a lot of naturally occurring bacteria, and they have their own signal that we can follow. But the polluting bacteria have a very distinct signal that we can use DNA-based methods to specifically look for those kinds of bacteria. And they have crazy names like Bacteroides and Lacnospiraceae and Bifidobacterium. And we call them alternative indicators because they're not the standard fecal indicators like E. coli or Enterococci, which are really easily cultured and it's really easy to count those kinds of bacteria. Those other bacteria are actually like the Lacnospiraceae and the Bacteroides are much more numerous, but we can't culture them. They're not easily counted. But we can filter the water and capture the DNA, actually the cells on a filter, extract out the DNA, and then use these different methods to actually quantify how many bacteria are there.
Now, you said you were testing for E. coli. that they were harmless, but these were the same ones they were closing the beaches for?
Yeah, I can give you beach monitoring 101 real quickly. When you think about monitoring water, what you really want to do is have something that's a very general indication that pollution is present. So E. coli is one bacteria that is in all people and animals, and it's really easy to culture. So the EPA has chosen that bacteria as what they call a fecal indicator. So this indicator can be easily cultured and quantified. And if the number of bacteria are over a certain level, and it's about 235 E. coli cells per 100 mils of water, then the water is deemed unsafe for swimming. It means that fecal pollution is present. There could be bad bacteria or viruses present that gets carried with fecal pollution. Therefore, you shouldn't swim. So the actual bacteria that we measure is not the problem. It's the canary in the coal mine saying, hey, wait a minute, there's fecal pollution present. Therefore, these other bad bacteria or pathogens might be present. We have found that most of the high E. coli counts that we find at the beach are really due to these localized coastal management issues. Once in a while, we will find a beach impacted by sewage sources, and that is usually because there's a broken sewer line or leaking infrastructure somewhere close by. It gets into the stormwater system, and then it discharges right towards the beach. Most of the time, though, we found that the beaches are really impacted by non-sewage sources. So the gulls roosting at the beach, or all the E. coli that accumulates on the pavement and on the grass from dog waste, bird waste, wild animals. When it rains, that all gets washed down the storm sewer. And often, if there's an outfall close to a beach, it will impact the water quality. One source I did not talk about is the sand itself. When you think about these bird droppings getting into the sand and the stormwater outfalls being close to the water and that water washes up on the sand, the E. coli bacteria and another kind of bacteria we follow, Enterococci, can actually take up residence in the sand and persist for a really long time, accumulate, and possibly even grow. So now our indicator that should be telling us, oh, maybe pathogens are present, maybe sewage is present, takes on a life of its own and starts to grow in the environment. Now it's not such a good indicator. So our latest Sea Grant project that we have, we came up with a cool title, Living on the Edge, because we're really looking at these bacteria that live on the edge of the water, right in the sand, and seem to just multiply and then get washed back into the water. And now, instead of testing for what we really want to test for, you know, is there a problem? Now, if you take a water sample, you're just following the dynamics of E. coli growing in the sand. So we're trying to figure out what causes that so we can help the beach managers understand, when do you have a real problem, fecal pollution in the water, or when are you just watching E. coli grow in the sand, washing in and out with the waves or with different rain events. And hopefully over the next year or two, we'll get some insight into better ways to monitor for that and separate those two causes of high levels of E. coli. The EPA just came out with their new water quality criteria, and they spent a lot of time looking very carefully at what they should monitor for. And they chose one of the general indicators, enterococci, which really, when you think about it, you're being overprotective if you test for enterococci, because if there's pollution present, you'll have high enterococci. And if enterococci is growing in the sand, you'll also have high enterococci. So you'll have what's essentially false positives, but you probably won't have any false negatives, meaning you leave the beach open when there's really a serious problem there. But one of the things the EPA did write into their criteria is some flexibility. So different sites can use some of these new tools we're developing to use an alternative indicator or another method. So if they do have a problem beach that maybe enterococci has just taken up residence in the sand, it's a big problem for monitoring, then they can go to some other methods that they can maybe validate and use either in conjunction with enterococci or maybe even in place of enterococci if they can validate it enough.
At this point in the conversation, we were joined by Amber Koski, one of Dr. McClellan's graduate students. So I asked her to explain something. Tell me about gulls.
I've been looking at the impact of gulls on beach environments and looking at how they impact water quality monitoring efforts. So in beach environments, you have human inputs of sewage, you have domestic animals, you have wildlife, and I'm trying to figure out ways that we can track gulls or other pollution through their sources.
I have a strange image of you running down a beach trying to catch a gull. How are you doing this?
Well, we go to the beach and we collect their fecal samples. So that sounds much less fun. So yeah, we go down there and we bring the samples back to the lab and then we isolate DNA from them. We know from our sequencing that we've done in the lab, gulls are ridden with E. coli and enterococci, so this can confound water quality monitoring efforts. So we're trying to investigate different ways that we can monitor them and discriminate gull contamination from other sources of contamination.
Now, gulls don't seem all that threatening. Are populations exploding in some areas? Haven't they always been here? What's going on with gulls?
The populations have been increasing lately. And you're right, the bacteria associated with gulls aren't as threatening or harmful as, say, human sewage or other types of animals. But what it is sometimes there can be unnecessary beach closings. We go, we collect a sample, and we find that we have high levels of E. coli or enterococci. You can have a beach closing as a result of that. And it could very well just be because of the gulls, so the beaches may not be closing for the right reasons. What's important is if you're identifying whether or not the pollution is coming from a gull or from sewage, because there's so many bacteria and viruses associated with sewage that is threatening to human health. So then that's a good reason to close the beaches. So these gulls could be confounding the water quality monitoring efforts.
What type of gulls live on Lake Michigan?
What type of gulls? Seagulls?
There's different types of gulls. Oh. For the record, there are at least 17 species of gulls that have been identified on Lake Michigan. But the most common are the herring gull, the ring-billed gull, and the smaller Bonaparte's gull. Back to our story. How did you get involved in this work? What did you do before you chased seagulls?
I didn't have any molecular experience prior to coming to school here. And Dr. McClellan's like, Amber, here, we have a project. It's been kind of underway for a couple of years. Do you want to give it a go? So I said, sure. So that's how I got involved in the project. It's supposed to be a way to get me acclimated to the lab and using different molecular techniques. But we learned a few things that were pretty interesting and pretty novel. So that's what exploded into this gull project, which has now evolved into my thesis.
Now, is Sea Grant helping fund this?
Yep, Sea Grant is funding this project. With my thesis work, I'm really hoping we can get a better idea of the true risks for beach closings. Is it gulls? Is it something else? It's really important that you discriminate this, because if you are closing beaches for unnecessary reasons, there can be huge economic implications for this, and there's a false sense of security as well. So you want to make sure you're conveying an accurate public health message to people.
Where do you hope to end up with all this?
When I'm done with my degree here, I would like to go into a position where I can integrate molecular biology with epidemiology. I'm really interested in the public health application of water quality monitoring, integrating my experience here, molecular genetics, and my epidemiology background. So I'm hoping to blend those two together in the future.
Sounds like a pretty good double threat.
I think so. In the title, molecular epidemiologist has quite a ring to it.
There's not a lot of those hanging out on the street corner.
No, I don't think so.
All right. Okay, dog, let's load up. I think there's a change plans here. I think we are going to go back to the School of Freshwater Sciences. I've seen some things here at Irritan Beach State Park that I got some questions about. And who knows, maybe somebody can even tell me why there's quarries on the edge of Lake Michigan. So, I will check in with you guys once we hit Milwaukee. This is Chris Bocast and Dogus. Till next time. This recording was produced by Chris Bocast for the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. Thanks for listening.